hopped on the horse and started a film career. Picture called The Big Trail. Well, I made quite a few since then. Some good.
The AIDS Vancouver Helpline is here to help. Open from 9 to 4, Monday to Friday, the Helpline answers questions about HIV and safer sex. Call to find medical support in your area without giving your name. Run by volunteers, the Helpline is one of the many programs from AIDS Vancouver combating the HIV epidemic in the Lower Mainland. While not medical professionals, our volunteers answer your questions confidentially and anonymously. The Helpline number is 604-696-4666. Or contact us at aidsvancouver.org.
This is my life. I wake up in the morning, I eat, I sleep, I shit.
Breakfast with the Browns.
So whatever it is, but I never shut it off for 5 minutes.
I can't wait to impress my friends with my astounding knowledge of cool.
Join your favorite Brownsters and tune in and listen to the best selection of down-tempo electropop lounge core.
Strictly Squaresville.
Remember, subtle, basic, Brown.
Breakfast with the Browns
on CITR 101.9 FM every Monday morning
from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m.
The older I get, the more life starts to make sense and the less I care.
Now we're riding the rainbow across it and we're making it like young. Now we're riding the rainbow to Cloudsville, and we're making it like you. Now we're riding the rainbow to Cloudsville.
You know, you can give 100 examples of what it isn't, but man, you're going to have a hell of a time saying what it is.
Welcome to another episode of UBC Arts on Air, a program devoted to profiling members of the Faculty of Arts and some of its more fascinating programs. And this evening, I'm pleased to welcome Shelley Rosenblum, curator of academic programs at the Belkin Gallery, the university's premier art gallery. Welcome, Shelley.
Hi, Ira, and thank you very much for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure, really. It's great. I mean, I've known the Belkin for years in a variety of incarnations, but can you tell us something about how the Belkin got started and what brought it to its current sort of location and building?
Absolutely. So the Belkin Gallery opened its doors in 1995 as a replacement for the University Art Center and Gallery that had been around for many years in the basement of Main Library. Not a space that we'd expect to find an art gallery. But I think the beginnings there have a lot to do with the kind of gallery it's evolved into, because it demanded very creative programmings and insights and curatorial work because it was such a lousy space. It was a cavernous basement with no natural light. So when the beautiful building we have now opened in 1995, it looks like what we expect a gallery to be, but there was already a long tradition of really cutting-edge thinking about what a show should look like at a university. Interesting curatorial innovation.
I remember the original Belkin, and I used to go to it quite a bit, but I could never quite stand up straight.
Yeah.
The ceiling always seemed to be lower than I expected, and I remember poles and barriers.
Yes,
and
so there are many. I've only read descriptions, and I know of it anecdotally, as a really dark, cavernous, but not unwelcoming place because it attracted a terrific community.
Well, yes, and I recall also quite a bit of sort of avant-garde out there, you know, shows, perhaps because the space was confining, and so it had to be used more creatively and more imaginatively.
And I think there was a real sense of need to bring things to campus and to Vancouver that answered that desire for that. So there was always a real internationalist perspective to the kind of things that were brought into the university art gallery spaces.
So what did the new building mean in terms of what was being shown and, I suppose, equally important, how art is presented?
Well, I think it made clear the university's position of the centrality of the visual arts. So the building is an award-winning building and very interesting architecture. The Peter Cardew building has... I think it made clear the university's position of the centrality of the visual arts. So the building is an award-winning building and very interesting architecture. The Peter Cardew building has well remarked across the architectural community. It provides a lot of flexibility for the kinds of shows. So the gallery is very interested in curating as research and questions it asks and not being constrained by a collection or a series of objects or a building. So if you notice, every time you come into a show in the gallery, the configurations of the walls is different. So we have two main walls on axes that can be oriented to the narrative or the atmosphere or the argument that's being made in a specific show. It also provided a lot more opportunity for larger shows with that kind of space. There's a lot of new media work that we're collecting now and showing, a lot of video. There's large enough space for sculptural works. We have a lot of programs in the gallery now, so we have room for curating music series and symposia and lectures. That building came into being with the Scott Watson being director and curator of the gallery, and I think he really articulated very well the mandate for the gallery that came with that building, and that was understanding contemporary art as a research-based project, a unit of inquiry like the other departments we're used to finding in the faculty.
One of the issues, I think, with almost every gallery is storage. Where do you put the works that are not on
show? Funny you should ask about storage.
Isn't it? Tell us about storage and the challenges and how the Belkin meets that
An ongoing
challenge.
Source of consternation and misery, I'd say, for the people at the gallery that deal with that. And I'd say in our staff meetings, it always comes up as a conundrum, a lament, and a challenge. We simply don't have the resources for storage that we need, and that's wonderful because our collection is growing. We keep a lot of things off-site now. We share some storage with the library and with another art storage facility. What that means, unfortunately for us, is we don't have everything at our hands. And as we think of the special mandate of a university gallery and its role not just in exhibitions but in pedagogy, it would be wonderful to have the collection at hand and the space in the gallery to use the collection as a living resource.
What about a satellite gallery? Has that ever been discussed or suggested? And even on campus, but another location?
Well, we're really hoping for a building expansion. And that is something that is out there. And of course, that depends on how such a thing gets funded. And there have been all sorts of plans and studies done to what would best suit the gallery, and a building expansion would be best. But we do, as you may know, have a satellite gallery called Satellite Gallery, of all things, downtown on Seymour Street. We program there with the Museum of Anthropology and Presentation House, so we share that space. And it's very important to have that kind of outreach in downtown. And that is a collaborative space where we investigate ways of working together and also provide a space for CCST students to curate shows, the curatorial and critical studies. And the mandate there is slightly different than what we have at the Belkin, but it has existed in various forms. It answers a separate need from the storage problem.
So is it you've had it 5 years or more recent than that?
There was the one on Seymour Street now has been the satellite gallery for only a number of years. Before that, it was another location. So there's always been an investment in having a presence downtown.
Well, I think that's wonderful.
Off campus.
I think, yes, it's very important. Now, tell me something about your title, Curator of Academic Programs. It sounds terrifically serious and very heavyweight.
It's a strange title, isn't it?
What does it mean? What do you do?
What does it mean is an interesting question. The idea for a position like this is partly the brainchild of the Mellon Foundation. And they diagnosed a problem in American universities that they had noticed. And they thought, why is it that we have a symptom of excellent universities with excellent museums and collections that have no connection to one another in their work and their outreach? And what does it mean for a university museum to fulfill the special mandate of that kind of museum? So it has different obligations, but a different set of responsibilities than museums we might otherwise be used to. Less commercial pressures, but pedagogical and intellectual pressures that other museums might not have. So they decided to fund a position like this at various schools, at Yale, at Princeton, at Harvard, at a few places, to get someone in to think about connecting the intellectual impetus of life on campus with the work of the museum. So there was no job description, and there was no sense of how that might be done. There was a sense that if it were successful, we'd be able to recognize it, but without a recipe for how to do that. So I think part of why I love the position so much is it's always trying to figure out how best to address the problem, the diagnosis, and to find a cure. And I think that happens in many different ways.
So do you work not only with, of course, the director and the other curators and so forth, do you work with the Department of Visual Arts and Art Theory and so forth?
Yeah, so AVAT, Art History, Visual Art, and Theory, yeah, they're natural partners for us for obvious reasons, because of what they study, because of the studio art program, because of CCST. So that's an easy demographic in that regard. I'm really interested in how we can make the argument in better ways that were relevant across the faculty and across the university. So I'm trying to reach out to departments to develop research projects or to quite simply have conversations and see natural points of engagement that seem like less natural places. What would it mean to have an artist in residence at the Michael Smith Laboratories? We don't have that yet, but I think it would be a terrific idea. We've been working with mining faculty and hopefully with students on collaborating on a project with the German artist Maria Eichhorn, who has a very interesting project for a tunnel. She wanted to construct a tunnel from the gallery to the perimeter.
That's brilliant. I love it.
She's fantastic. So how do we engage across the projects on campus in meaningful, productive ways? Is part of the challenge.
That's fascinating. What about the curatorial program? Can you talk about that a bit? I know one exists. Is it initially coming from Ovid and the Belkin participates in it, or just explain it?
Yeah, okay. So we have, we at the university, I mean UBC, not we at the Belkin, have a CCST program, which is a graduate program, curatorial and critical studies, where we train people to be curators. That's something very different in a contemporary art context than what we're used to on the historical look on the work of curators. It's not necessarily object-based. The Belkin is really excellent in committee to avant-garde work, really from the 60s on. So while in our permanent collection we say 1945 on, and we do have some earlier works, important Canadian modern works, Emily Carr, Group of Seven, the forte is contemporary art. So curators working in contemporary art are creating knowledge through curatorial work and research and trying to understand connections between institutions, museums, objects, publics, individuals, artists. And so it's a very collaborative research-based kind of program to work in CCST. And those students do work very closely with the Belkin, which is a strong part of the program, that hands-on exposure and work.
Do they actually propose an exhibition, if not see a proposal through?
Absolutely. So part of the work to graduate for every CCST student is to put up a show from start to finish. So the research to conceptualize, to pitch, to put it together, to develop, to put it up, and as we often see, to also take it down. Not
That's
to walk
an important
away
part.
After the show.
No one
exactly.
thinks about that.
Right, when the fanfare is all over. So,
can you give us an idea of how the Belkin formally goes about determining a show and how much time is involved? Are you looking at a 18-month lead time, a 24-month lead time? Is there a committee? Do you and Scott sit down and say, this is what we're going to do? Take us through the process.
Okay. We like to be at least 2 years out on a schedule, so you really have a lot of time. I think the gallery is getting better about having more lead time, largely because of this new position, curator of academic programs. In order for us to engage deeply and meaningfully with other partners on campus, it requires, as you know, a lot of time to set up very basic interactions, let alone a large international conference or symposium, things like this. So we try to have the proper lead time to do that. Another thing we've become more aware of is how we want the exhibition schedule to line up with the academic schedule as an university gallery. So the MFA show has traditionally been held at the beginning of every new school year in September at the gallery. That's a very short show. We'd like to have longer shows for our semester show, so that's changed around. So we know that we have a major exhibition each semester, an MFA graduating show during graduation in the spring, and then a summer show. I think the schedule used to fluctuate a lot more. We have a pretty firm sense of what the calendar looks like. And then we like to think about how much are we showing from our collection. Once a year, there should be a show that highlights the acquisitions that we're taking part in, and we can talk more about what a collection show looks like. And then we have these other blocks for main shows. Now, unfortunately, funding is a major component of putting on an exhibition, and the amount of time and research and gathering that goes into curating a show requires a lot of human and other resources. So not all the shows are curated at the Belkin. The show we have on now, State of Mind, New California Works, circa 1970, is a fantastic and amazing show that was not curated here. It's a traveling show, and it's come from Berkeley and from the Orange County Museum. That came out of a 10-year project that was funded by the Getty Museum. I don't know if you were down in California for Pacific Standard Time. There were shows all over the state over many months, over a year, and highlighting and investigating different aspects of California art. And this came out of the incredible largesse of the Getty and the massive amounts of funding they could put into all these shows. So that took many years to do. We thought it was a wonderful show, and we brought it over. So that's part of what determines how many of our shows. Now, what are we curating, and what comes is generated by research interests and what we are most agitated by in terms of pressing questions of understanding the moment that we're in, the place that we're in. The show that we're working on now for the fall is meant to coincide with the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which will be in Vancouver, September 18th to 21st. So this is a show that looks at the history, legacy, impact of residential schools as a major component of Canadian art history, historically and in a contemporary moment. It is not a survey show, but it's trying to isolate artists that address it in a way that seems important for us to look at.
Now, from time to time, I hear about another art gallery in Vancouver, a rather large art gallery. Do you coordinate anything with them or share programming so that there's no overlap or no contradiction or no similarity, or you just go your own happy Point Grey way?
I like that description of our own happy Point Grey way. It's a quite a small community in Vancouver, the arts community, which is wonderful, and everyone knows what each other, what everyone else is doing, for better or for worse. Sometimes things work beautifully together purely by serendipity. As you know, Traffic is up at the Vancouver Art Gallery right now, which is a show on Canadian conceptual art, and that we couldn't have planned it better to go with our show on California conceptualism. It's a brilliant way to think in a deeper way about a series of questions that each of the exhibitions is asking people to think about with slightly different emphasis. That was not planned. Traffic was supposed to open years ago at the VAG, and it got delayed for various reasons. So I especially like when mistakes work out in our favor in that way. I do try to work closely with the person at the VAG who would be the equivalent of a non-university museum who would do academic programs. I think we should all be talking with one another as much as possible on campus and outside. So we really do try to foster those relationships. I wouldn't say that we plan our schedules together, but we're aware and try to accommodate things that will make for more interesting engagement in the city.
So tell me what's missing from the Belkin. What would you like to see happen in terms of either programming, publications, physical space? You alluded to a kind of hope that there'll be an increase in space. Tell me what's missing. What you'd really like to see in the Belkin 5 years from now?
What I'd really like to see at the Belkin is space in the building that allows for pedagogical programming to better answer the needs of students and faculty. So we have needs. There are programs we'd like to do, teaching courses out of the gallery, having classes come in as a matter of course to use the incredible resources that we have. It's very rare for a museum, for a gallery, to have an archive like we do. The archive at the Belkin is fantastic. I'd like to see a lot more research happening using that, and a lot more learning happening in the classroom through the use of these resources. I feel like we are a terribly underutilized resource on campus, and it really is an amazing place, the Belkin Gallery. I spent a lot of time in the Belkin in the years I was on this campus at UBC when I was affiliated with the English department, and was amazed by the way the exhibitions really agitate important questions. I don't think campus is paying enough attention to what goes on at the Belkin, and I spent a lot of time thinking why that is. What I'd like to see in 5 years, besides the physical resources at a building to incorporate pedagogy meaningfully, is also seeing more of my colleagues in the gallery.
Yes,
I don't understand.
You're right. Is there a newsletter? Does the Belkin distribute an e-newsletter?
We are working on the idea of a newsletter. We do not have one. It's a good idea. We do send out press releases and announcements, but we're going to consolidate them into a newsletter. It requires that people sign up for it.
I understand.
So I implore anyone who's listening to the show to come visit our website and sign up for our mailing list. There's a lot going on. The School of Music puts on a concert every semester at the Belkin. There's been original music composed for these concerts. It's a wonderful event that we have. We have an essay contest once a year, a Dean of Arts Prize for the best essay in visual literacy. I'd like undergraduates to know about this and be writing for it. It's a terrific prize. It's a 1,000 words, $1,000.
Do you have to be an undergraduate? I've got a couple of ideas. I mean, that just might
maybe
really
you'll adjudicate with us, Ira.
Well, you never know. Anything is possible. Anything is possible. So do you feel any need to, just to kind of wrap things up, coordinate the programming of the Belkin with other university galleries, either on the West Coast or across the country? Is there, for example, an association of university art galleries?
There is, but we're not doing enough to collaborate. So we come together to share our successes and our failures, to share what works and doesn't work, and to keep one another abreast of programs. But I think there should be a lot more collaborative work. And that's something that happens a lot more on the East Coast when everyone's much closer together. But there is such a clear series of conversations and relationships all the way up our coast, all across this Cascadian Northwest. We should be in a much more active dialogue through exchanges, taking courses in one another's departments and spending time in each other's galleries and archives. So that's something I'd like to see a lot more of.
Sounds wonderfully exciting. And really, in a way, I have the impression the Belkin is sort of on the cusp of a whole series of new steps and new directions, which I think will have a tremendous, wonderfully exciting intellectual effect on the campus.
We're hoping so. It feels like a very exciting time.
Wonderful. Shelley, thanks so much. Shelley Rosenblum is curator of academic programs at the Belkin Gallery. And do join us again for the first of the year when we begin a new series of UBC Arts on the Air. Thanks again, Shelley.
Thanks very much, Ira.
And that was the conclusion of our arts report for this Wednesday evening, the interviews that you've been hearing over the last couple hours. My name is Michael Markowski. I'm going to be playing some music for you here for the next hour and a half before the next DJ comes in. The first thing I'm going to play here is a song off of the new Chilly Gonzalez album. It's called Solo Piano 2, and this is a nice song here. Thank you.
sei si è storto.
Right here on News 101.
What motivated you to become a candidate in the provincial election?
The media portrayal of last week's protest that resulted in polarizing images of black-clad activists taking to the streets.
He was just explaining to us the reason why they wanted to show this film on campus.
The official stance is that we are for the Olympics.
News 101 reporter Brad Pepping was there.
By discriminating against homeless people in Vancouver, there's a disproportionate impact on Aboriginal people as well as people with disabilities.
I was pretty outraged. I mean, it is outrageous.
In-depth coverage from an alternative perspective. News 101 is Vancouver's only live, volunteer-produced student and community newscast, bringing you local, national, and international news from an alternative perspective. Tune in Mondays and Fridays at 5 p.m. right here on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. Live streaming and podcasts are available online at citr.ca.
So, welcome back here. We were just listening to a couple of things I said right off the top. That was Chili Gonzalez playing some piano for us off his new album, Solo Piano 2. And then we were listening to some mariachi music, the Mariachi Ghost and their new EP, Machete. And that was song number 2 there, Mariachi Ghost, the title track. My name is Michael, and you're listening to UBC Radio here, CITR 101.9.